Hello, this is Chaz from Quiet Speculation, and you're listening to the QS Cast. If you're a QS subscriber, you're hearing this as soon as it gets published. If you're not a subscriber, you had to wait a few days. If you want to listen to the podcast as soon as it's published, or you just want to know more about Quiet Speculation, go to quietspeculation.com/tour and check out everything we have to offer.
To people,
people can actually come in and
we're
listen.
We're only livecasting the people that are in the room here listening with us. It's not like all over the internet.
All right. Sometimes I'll say, "All right, can we cut this out?" I'll say the following, but I will be careful about what I say. Yeah.
No, it does get edited, but for anyone that's in the room with us, they will hear it.
Oh man. Okay.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the QS Cast, another vendor series to keep things rolling. Joining us this week is Tarkan. What is up, Tarkan?
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
Thanks for joining us, Tarkan. We really appreciate it.
I'm here from the very beginning this time. Everything's great, and I'm here.
Phenomenal. And as always, well, a returning guest, a very special and esteemed guest, Nathaniel, CEO and owner of Card Hoarder. You must have known him if you even hear the words MTGO. What is up, Nathaniel? Thanks for giving us some time and joining us on the cast again. We love having you here.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. You always make me feel so special when I come on with that introduction. So probably a little bit more than I deserve, but I appreciate it.
Not at all. Yeah, we've had you on a few times now. It's always been amazing, and we're happy you give us some time. It's always been great. So you are special.
Well, I do other casts and stuff, but you know, it's mostly talking about magic and stuff like that, which we talk about, but the financial and the business side of things is I don't really get to talk to people that much about that, and it is obviously very near and dear to my heart. So,
and you do a great job. I mean, you're the best in the biz. Let's get to it. There's been quite a bit of a gap between us having you on last time and now. A lot of things have happened. Tark, you're going to kind of steer this ship a little bit today terms of, you know, kind of what has happened. Because if anything, you, Nathaniel, are one of the opinions I greatly care about when it comes to Magic Arena, which we will talk about. That whole thing.
Is the sky falling?
Is that the question? Yeah. We always like to dial it in with you to see if MTGO is going to explode or if it's over tomorrow. So we like to keep the pulse on what's going on. But I would really love to have that conversation with you because Magic Arena is kind of a really big topic amongst the community. We'd love to hear your take on it. So you want to just start off with that, Tark?
I actually just want to just quickly backtrack because we have a lot of new insiders and a lot of new subs, and even some of the people in the room now may not have heard the old cast, but for those who don't know, Nathaniel, we originally had Nathaniel on. I mean, I think Nathaniel, you were one of our first guests with the vendor series. In fact, you might have been the first, and this was back when you had Isle of Cards. Which Isle of Cards was your paper business, paper magic cards, and you guys were an online vendor as well as a really, really, really potent buy list, and you were one of our featured merchants in Trader Tools, and you know we did a lot of business with you, and I know Chaz and I even back before I got involved with QS, Chaz and I were early adopters of Isle of Cards. So
I'm so sad it's gone. I'm very sad. You have no idea, Nathaniel, how sad I am.
Yeah. So what I kind of want to just briefly do is intro you. You know, obviously everyone knows Card Hoarder, but people didn't really know Isle of Cards. And those that did, you know, unfortunately, you ended up having to move on from that venture. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about how that went. And last time we talked to you, you were kind of things were moving along, and then unfortunately you moved on. So what's been going on?
Yeah, so I mean, so we have an announcement that more or less explains what happened on the website, and of course, you know, the cynical of people will be like, "Well, they just failed," which wasn't the case. Ultimately, there was a lot of factors, and some of the stuff that we haven't really mentioned, and I probably won't. Just like logistically difficult, like it's very stressful to run that versus the Magic Online side of things? Just, you know, like dealing with customer requests and problems, and our warehouse was not where I'm physically located. So I wasn't able to, like if somebody messaged at 8 o'clock, like I'm, you know, for card holder, I'm around and I can handle something like that. But if it's like, I'm like, all right, well, I don't know, I'm not at the warehouse and I can't go to the warehouse because it's, you know, 1,000 miles away. So I promise we'll get back to you tomorrow. So it wasn't great in that sense. So that was always like a pain point. But I mean, honestly, like the Magic Online business has grown so much, and the paper business takes so much time. Like you mentioned that for Isle, you know, a lot of people didn't know who we were, and we, you know, we tried to, we started from scratch, and we did not use TCG Player, which is difficult to do. And we achieved some moderate amount of success, but from a monetary standpoint, you know, making a little bit and spending a lot of time versus where I can, you know, I can spend my time on Magic Online for as long as it exists. and, you know, that time is worth 20 times from a business perspective. Like, it's just, it remained difficult to continue to justify spending the time on Isle. And so though we were doing okay, at the end of the day, like, we just, I mean, sometimes if you're on businesses, you'll know, like, sometimes you just got to say, well, you know what, it's not worth the time. It doesn't mean that we're not going to maybe do something later. And of course we have our website, and I've had people ask us about that, and we talked about maybe trying to sell the business or something, but I think ultimately there's not that many people in the paper world that would have enough money to buy the tech like that. So we have it still, and maybe we'll do something with it later. Maybe we won't, I don't know, but it was more or less just a time thing. And we just couldn't justify spending time on Isle when, you know, time on cardholder is worth 20 times, you know, it's just tough to justify.
So, so what basically it sounds like to me is Magic Online is just like killing it so well, and card order was just growing that it just didn't, it literally, the numbers didn't match up, where it was like, you know, if we take these resources and just keep on plugging them into card order, you know, we'll do exponentially, you know, we'll have exponentially that much more success.
It's more my time and Shane's time. Shane's our coder and my co-owner, and it's more our time. Like, of course we can hire employees, but from a scaling perspective, when you're scaling in paper, it's like, well, you got to hire a bunch more employees, yeah, and you've got that to deal with. Of course, for card order, we have employees. We've got, I think, 8 employees, but, you know, given the size of card order versus the paper, if we were the same size, it'd be like 100 employees. It's just a different way of scaling. Not that we couldn't do it, it's just like to get there, it's just so exhausting to even think about.
that's kind of where I took that announcement to. And, you know, that's kind of where I was going to pose my question next. So you kind of answered it, just in terms of the scaling and having, you know, the not only just hires, but the right hires. It just kind of felt like, maybe from what I was reading, is that it just, like, the time wasn't there, and you could just put that better spent on card hoarder. You more recently hired Aaron Campbell, very great hire for your community manager. So very awesome on that. You made an announcement on that, and, you know, here and there you'll hire like a you know, someone to fill orders online. Uh-huh. And you're absolutely right. Like, I just kind of felt, well, I loved using Isle, but I think we talked about this on a previous vendor cast that it was just kind of hard for you not to just hire people for Isle, but to the right people, you know, and to keep those people,
Right. Because, you know, all of our people that I know, and I've been a Magic Online dealer for like, I don't know, it's like 13, 15 years now. So, I mean, all my contacts are in the online world. So I know a handful of people in the paper world, and I met some people and it was cool, but you're right. I mean, finding, like, cause at some point you got to get a manager, right, or a warehouse manager. And we were very close to hiring someone, and I think they would have been good, but it was like, well, if we do this, then we're all in. And, you know, so we took the exact opposite approach, as it turns out. But, you know, I mean, it was kind of like a, do we want to go all in here, or do we want to just focus where we know, like, you know, if I spend, you know, an extra 20 hours a week on Isle, and that's 20 hours that card holder could have received, you know, it's definitely better spent at this point on card holder. And I mean, it's sad because I have always wanted a paper site, always. for like my entire life, basically. So it was one of my like my passions. I was the big proponent of doing it, despite the many pain points in comparison to running an online business. And of course, my expertise isn't there. So it, a lot of times it was like, well, we're having all these problems with the international shipments and the people are just saying they're not arriving. And we know they are, but we don't have tracking. Yeah. Because it stops once it leaves. I mean, there's stuff like that. And it just feel like I just lose years off your life, you know? And since, you know, since I'm not used to it, I mean, eventually, like, you kind of just get hardened to it, right? And you'll have a policy or whatever, and it won't bother you. But every time we had something, it just, like, it was like daggers in my heart. Yeah. So I'm super sad about it. And, you know, I'm not going to say that we won't ever get back into the paper side of things, or that I won't, or whatever. But for now, you know, Card Hoarder is growing to the point where it makes sense to spend time there. So that's, you know,
clearly,
it was a business decision. So it's sad, but you know, ultimately, sometimes that's the right move. And then, you know, maybe I'll become independently wealthy and I can just start an LGS and don't even care about money anymore, you know?
There you go.
Well, so why don't we then change? Let's switch gears a little bit, because when we had you on before, our primary focus, in fact, we pretty much mostly talked about paper and aisle. We kind of touched on Card Hoarder a little bit, but you know, most of the time was focused on aisle because you were growing that business, and you know, there was that had a lot of impact with, you know, insiders. But you know, now you're 100% all in on Card Hoarder. Why don't you just briefly kind of tell the listeners a little bit about the beginnings of Card Hoarder and like where things are going now? Because, you know, I mean, you literally basically shut down another successful business because Card Hoarder was doing so well. So we'd love, you know, I'd love to know where things started and, you know, how they've evolved and where they are now.
Sure. So I mentioned that I had been in the Magic Online business for, I didn't even know. It was basically like when I was a senior in college, I got into the business. It was before bots even existed. But Card Hoarder has also been around a similar amount of time, but myself and Shane, my co-owner, and we have another owner as well, the three of us purchased Card Hoarder about 3.5 years ago at this point. And the old owner had kind of been thinking about selling for a long time. You know, the site wasn't doing, it was doing okay, you know, it was fine, but the site wasn't doing great. If any of you used the site back, like when we took over the site, I said to myself, I don't understand how we have any customers because this site is unusable. And we were planning on, you know, updating the site or whatever. And then we got into that and we're, you know, a lot of places will use like an e-commerce skin or whatever. But it doesn't quite do what you need it to do, right? For Magic, not just Magic, but for Magic Online, when you need, you know, your currencies and tickets, and it's a little more nuanced. So Shane just like straight up built a site from scratch, which is exactly what we did for Isle as well. Although of course the two share like backbones and technology, but so everything on our site is custom, which is great, and we can do whatever we want. We can add in the features we want, and that has worked out really well. So we focused on the technology first, and then on the community stuff, and we do a lot of stuff for the community. You mentioned we just hired a community manager. It's pretty important to us to do that, and I know it sounds cliche, and I'm sure your audience is kind of like, yeah, whatever, but it does matter to us a lot. Especially because, you know, for someone that makes their living from Magic Online, it's important for me to like at least give back in ways to the community, because it's like it's, you know, you always call it like the dream, like working in Magic is the dream, like getting your steady paycheck or not so steady paycheck as the case may be from doing something you love is awesome. So when we first bought Card Hoarder, that wasn't in the cards really. It was like I owned, I think at that point, four other businesses. So I'm, you know, I'm an entrepreneur by trade or by heart or whatever. And so this opportunity came along to buy it, and we did. And so the goal was like, I'm going to basically work like part-time on it. And, you know, the other people will work part-time. We'll have our employees, blah, blah, blah. And it, you know, just, we basically like with a lot of businesses, you'll find there's, you hit some point and I can't remember what it was. I think it was like 2 years ago, you hit this point and it's like, it feels like everything just comes together. And, you know, all of a sudden you're starting to make money and it's like, oh my, this is great. Like we don't have to worry about spending, you know, $10 a month on our subscription to whatever, you know, now it's like, sure, let's just do that. So we hit that point And then it kept growing, and it allows you to do so much more too at that point, you know, being able to hire more people, being able to just like offer, you know, if people need a refund or whatever, you know, we don't normally offer refunds. It's like, yeah, sure, whatever. You know, we can afford to do that. We take the loss and it's fine. It just gives you so much more latitude when things are working right. So things worked right and then just grow from there. And, you know, when you start making enough money and I can say, all right, I'm going to start working full time. So, you know, for a card holder, I was working like 70 hours a week, maybe. I don't work that much now because now we've reached the point where it continues to grow and we have enough money to, you know, hire, say, a community manager and just take things off of our plate. And I work 30 hours or 35 hours a week, which is, you know, a lot more palatable from my perspective. So success begets success almost, which is another cliche, I'm sure, but it's really true. I know you see like goldfish. Like goldfish is another good example where like they just hit a critical mass and like things just started working, right? So and then that opens up so many doors of like what type of content they can offer, what sort of services, and you know, just so it's that sort of thing where for a business when you hit it, it's glorious. And it just takes the weight, it takes away a lot of the stress with owning your own business because it's just not as like, well, I don't know if this is going to work, which is, yeah. You know, so for card hoarder, yeah, we've, you know, every new set, like we hit new records and things continue to grow. I think I'm sure we'll talk about Arena and what that means and stuff, I'm sure in a bit, but you know, like yesterday, I think we had the most orders we've ever had in a day.
Just real fast. When you say growth and in orders, can you just kind of, because again, not some of our player or some of our subscribers might not even use Magic Online or even really be familiar with the bot system. So what does growth exactly mean and how does that work in that ecosystem?
Well, so bots and sites are a little bit different. When it comes to a bot, so on Magic Online, you can only trade with one person at a time. So a bot can trade with one person at a time. So it's very expensive to house the inventory in that way because each bot needs to have all the cards because somebody that's there is it's like browsing at a store, except you can only have one customer at a time. So when you expand your bot sales, you know, it's basically a question of like, is there downtime with the bot, meaning nobody's trading with it? Which of course happens. The stronger your brand is, the less likely that is to happen. And then you can of course expand into additional bots. And you know, so I think we have, I don't even remember, 13 bots, let's say. And then you have your website. The website's a little bit different. Website, you know, you can have infinity people browsing your wares, and you're sort of like sharing, you have like a site inventory, right? And so instead of having to have like a one-to-one ratio there, it's, you know, we have the site inventory and that's sort of available, and you don't need to have as much. But you know, you have to have everything in stock, of course, and that makes it much easier when you're sharing inventory on a site. But the site really, when I talk about sales growth, I'm mostly talking about the site because that's what can grow. The bots, without opening up an additional bot, I mean, either you're removing some of the downtime, which we've done as we've grown and we've become more well known, that has happened. But you know, mostly it's the site because it's just, you know, you can continue to scale with the site. I mean, not to infinity, but a lot. And that's, you know, it's a big difference about the difference between paper and Magic Online. It's like we might go out of stock on something now and have it in stock again in 3 hours because it spiked or whatever and it got bought out and then people start selling it back and it's back in the system. Very efficient system. Whereas paper, another source of stress. It's like, well, all right, we sold out of this card that spiked and all right, we're going to increase our buy list price. So we got them coming in. When are they going to arrive? I don't know. Maybe that order never comes in, which happened plenty of times. Maybe, and we had good buy listers. Maybe it comes in 3 days, but that's 3 days where you're out of stock on something. So the inventory is much more difficult to manage in paper than online.
So can you elaborate a bit on that and like this inventory system? Because even myself, I'm actually not super familiar with how, you know, an MTGO site store. So like if I go in and I buy everything out, how do you go on the MTGO and just buy up more? Like how does it work exactly?
Yeah. So the whole system is basically automated, which is beautiful. But the pricing system's automated. So if you come in and buy everything, the price has spiked, at least to some degree already. And then most of the buying is done via the bots. We do buy collections as well, but vast majority of the inventory just comes from bots. So, you know, people that, I don't know, follow prices, like maybe some of your users that follow prices, see a spike and they, you know, oh, I have 20 of these, I want to sell. So you see the price go up and that's when you sell, but it's an automated system. So the bots will just buy them in the next couple hours at the higher price, and then we get it back in stock and then it's ready to go again. So it's super. Yeah, I'm just looking at the chat, and one of the users is saying it's really hard to buy out a card online at 4 copies per order. And that is true. And it's actually gotten much harder. For the MTGO finance people, it used to be that the MTGO wiki price bots, which are basically the only publicly available bot chain. There's another one, MTGOSS, but you have to have a lot of money to get into that. And it's like quasi publicly available. But the MTGO wiki price one, anybody can kind of sign up and do it. And it used to be that those bots operated sort of independently of each other. And I was using them just like 2 weeks ago. And I had, you know what? It was last week, and I had 200 copies of Opt. And Opt had spiked because Magic Online changed the rarity had changed the legality for it being legal and standard because it's in Ixalan. And Ixalan hadn't come out yet. So the only copies were the Invasion copies. And Invasion on Magic Online is very, very thin supply. So we have our Overstock account, which is like basically all the stuff that we have from collections that we can never sell. And so there's like 20 million cards on there. And so I looked and like, oh, I got 200 copies of Op. So I just started selling them for like $3 or whatever. And like it brought the price down. I sold all of them, but it brought the price down to like 50 cents. It then spiked back up. But, you know, so I just wanted to get rid of them and be done with dealing with it from a time perspective. But you can see how quickly the prices move. And basically the wiki price bots, you know, there used to be, there would be like, I don't know. Let's just say there's 20 bots buying 4 copies. Now, if you sell 4 copies, it's like all the bots then know that that has happened and lower the price. So it's like they're all tied to a pricing system, which is how our pricing system works with some other bigger chains as well, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners realize that some of the bots have like exactly the same prices. And that's because pricing is like it's really hard to keep up on. If you watch how fast prices move on Magic Online, it's crazy, especially today. And the ultimate goal from a pricing perspective is like we want the market price. And so you can set up your algorithms however you want to be more or less sensitive to spikes. And, you know, so every bot chain has their own sort of thing, like GoBots has their own. But the number of independent systems these days, there's not that many. There's like, I think like 5 major ones. Because like it used to be WikiPrice was like many, 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 many bots operating independently. Now it's many, 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 many bots operating in conjunction with each other. So it's really hard to buy into and out of positions en masse on Magic Online. And like,
what integrated, what ended up integrating all of this? This whole economy, as opposed to them being their own.
For wiki price, you mean? You mean for wiki price?
Yes.
I guess I don't really know. I didn't see any announcement about it. They often will do. They'll put measures in place that are anti. We call it hoarding on Magic Online, but basically like buying a lot of copies. Like if you're a player, you don't need more than 4 copies of anything on Magic Online. So if you're buying more than that, then you're probably trying to make a profit in some way. The downside to dealers for that is, well, there's two downsides. There's the inventory. Like you want to have inventory available, so if somebody buys it all, then now you don't have it available. So that kind of sucks. And that's why we limit purchases to 4 ofs on our website, because we just want to have stuff in stock. If there's, you know, a bunch of people browsing for the same cards, you don't want one person to buy 16 and then have 3 customers that don't get any, you know. So that's more our motivation. And then the other motivation, which I suspect this change is related to, is you lose money. When prices change, I'm sure you guys know that creates an opportunity for the MTG Finance or MTGO Finance community to make money, because moving prices are what you need. If prices just stay the same all the time, it's pointless. But for us, stable prices are when we make the most money, because our business is just buying and selling cards, making a small margin. That's it. We don't speculate. We don't invest in anything. That's just not our business. So when WikiPrice used to operate that way, you know, I'm sure, like, when you wanted to get into and out of positions, like, you could maybe get a few to us, but not enough for it to matter. So you need to have a wide range of bots that you use. And WikiPrice offered a lot of bots that operated independently. So I suspect they lost a lot of money. I mean, I just, as an experiment, like two and a half years ago, like we just bought the software and just operated the bots just to see, and just like left it. And it didn't make money. It couldn't make money. So, I mean, I think a lot of the bots on WikiPrice don't make money. So I suspect that they do these things to try to prevent the types of losses that a bigger chain like us or GoatBots or whatever can absorb. Like, we just expect to lose money from price movements, and it just happens. And, you know, the pricing algorithms have little things in them to help prevent losses. Like, if we're getting a bunch of cards coming in, it'll increase the spread temporarily to just absorb some of the loss, or things like that. But, you know, it's part of doing business on Magic Online is you lose money to that sort of thing, which, of course, your listeners might hear as, that's how I can make money, because the big bot chains don't care. And not that we don't care, but like, we just expect it to happen. We expect to lose money when prices shift, and they shift around all the time. Like, if you watch the Ixalan prices, I checked yesterday, and like, most of the expensive things are worth like 40% less than they were yesterday. So,
yeah, I, since it was released on MTGO, I actually posted something, and I would see like crazy increases on some of the kind of the more desirable cards. You know, you see Hostage Taker, Carnage Tyrant, stuff like that. And I would see like huge percentages increases on MTGO. And I can fully well know in like not even 24 hours, those could be literally half of what they were yesterday.
Yep. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the Carnage Tyrant's a good example, because I think I saw it yesterday. It was in the low 30s, and now it's in like 18 or something.
Yeah.
That's a huge drop. But I mean, for people that play Magic Online, a lot of people, I mean, some of that demand, the initial demand, is us and other dealers, because like, we need to have stock. You know, everyone wants to know when it's available. So there's a sort of artificial bubble demand to get stocked up. And like, you'll see like a chain like GoatBots, super aggressive. Like, they don't care what they pay. You know, they'll take it in. Over the years, we've stopped acting like that a little bit and just say like, all right, we'll have them tomorrow. Like, I'd rather not lose five grand today. Like, just check back tomorrow. If you need the cards, GoatBots has them. Have at it. So that's more of a business decision. But once all the dealers then have it, I think it reduces the demand. And the demand that's left is someone that wants to start playing Constructed. And some people straight up don't care. Like, whatever. I mean, yeah, they have enough money, or they don't have enough money. They just don't care for whatever reason. They'll buy it, and I don't care that I'm going to lose 60% of the value in 2 days.
That's so. I'm always baffled. Not baffled. It feels very stock market-ish. Like, this, the up and down, and like, in like literally in 5 minutes a price can tank, and then 10 minutes later it's back up again. Like, is that basically how it works? Like, is your system automated? And is it just like literally just cards changing hands constantly, day in, day out, all, you know, 24 hour? And, you know, are you like, is there certain times that you're monitoring, or how does it work? I really am curious as to really like kind of the back end of this economy. And as far as from your perspective, you're a large business. How do you manage just the money in, the money out, the cards in, the cards out?
So all of that's automated, 100%. Like, there's a very, 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 very rare circumstances where I might zero out our inventory, because we will oversell, or not often, but on occasion we've oversold when something like super spikes, or like a card gets banned, and you know, when there's bannings that happen that are not expected, things go a little crazy. And you know, when we oversell, it's like, all right, like, wait a couple hours, we'll get some more, and we'll get them to you at the price you paid. But it's more just trying to prevent having to manually handle stuff, because ultimately, like, manually handling transactions is what we don't want. We want this to be automated. We also don't want to be like making emotional decisions on pricing. So when every botchain has their own, you know, I have no idea really how GoatBots does it. I mean, I'm sure it's, they end up in a similar place, I'm sure, because the goal is the same. The goal is to find the market price and have it be at market price. So when you adjust the price is, you know, that's sort of what you're adjusting. Like, do you want to adjust the price when you get one card sold to you or when you get four or 16 or 32? So it kind of depends on what it is. Like treasure chests, we've been making some adjustments there because they're a little bit of a different animal than a card. But the system, you know, it's kind of like your sensitivity to getting screwed on a price movement. And that's why they change, they shift even a little bit. Like if you go in and like if you sold 16 copies of a card to us, like you'll sell four, you get the same price. Then it might maybe drop like 5 cents or 2 cents or whatever. You sell four more. And then the system will keep buying them, but it's going to keep going down. At some point, it's like, all right, we got enough. We're done. Some places will continuously buy forever until the price goes to zero, which, you know, usually we're like, we don't want to screw you. So we'll just stop buying as opposed to, you know, yeah, let's go. Let's do this. Let's keep going and see how low you're willing to go. But there are botchains that will buy literally anything forever. I mean, it gets down to like one out of 10,000. I mean, you had to sell 10,000 of them for a ticket or something. But those are all like, you know, business decisions for the bots. But I've seen the WikiPrice bots because they're individuals. I've gone into a bot there and like I get. If I'm trying to sell a bunch of copies of something that I happen to have, I might get, you know, you look up the price. All right, fine. I see these bots are doing it. So then I go in for the trade and then like, you know, they pause the bot and like they must be sitting at their computer watching it trade. And then they're like, oh, like the price is actually half of what you just got quoted in the middle of the trade. That's the sort of stuff we want to avoid. Like we don't want to get involved. Like we want it to be, I'm not sure the exact right word, but I mean, we don't want emotion to get into it. We expect prices to fluctuate. We expect to lose money at certain times when there's big fluctuations in the market. We lose money. It just happens. And if you're a smaller botchain or just an individual, those types of losses can be harder to swallow because, you know, it can erode anything you make very quickly. But you're right. You have to be on top of stuff on Magic Online. And I think that had been the case the last time I was on the cast. I think it's even more the case now that the prices just, they're all over the place. And at least in some cases, and you can't really like take a position and just be like, come back in a month and see how it did. I mean, you can, it's a very risky in this situation, in my opinion.
So obviously, I mean, card hoarder is growing, and that means that, I mean, stands to reason that MTGO is growing, I'm assuming. And this is a huge question that everyone in the community is always talking about. You know, you have people saying MTGO is crap and it's antiquated. Every year it gets more antiquated. They don't, you know, it's old. It's just, it's going away. And I'm always like, yeah, but you know, Nathaniel here is just talking about how he's year over year improving. So it seems to me like Magic Online is doing quite well and is quite healthy, right?
Yes. So, well, there's always two questions, and I don't know which one it is. I don't know if this is Magic Online growth or us stealing business from competitors. I suspect it's some of both. But yeah, I mean, like Lee Sharp just gave a tweet, I think yesterday or the day before, he said they had the most ever concurrent users logged into Magic Online. So I do. What's that?
That says something to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has grown. I think it would continue to grow. I mean, it ultimately, like what you saw yet when that happened, Magic Online didn't perform great. There was a lot of system lag, and you know, I don't know how many people were online. Let's just say it was 20,000 at once. That's not that many. from a gaming perspective, it's not that many. Your servers should be able to handle that. And a lot of the flack that Magic Online gets is totally deserved. It is antiquated. It isn't what it should be. And for whatever reason, we've never have never gotten there. And, you know, my hope was that they would come in and sit and put in this investment and say, hey, like, this business model works. Like, I think they make a boatload of money on Magic Online. It's a huge cash cow. And the reason why it isn't as big as it could be is the software. It can't handle, like, it cannot handle the demand. And that has been true since its first existence. V1, that was why it just straight up stopped working. They never expected it to be popular. And it stopped working when it got too many people. That was actually the best version of Magic Online we've had. And that was from 15 years ago. If that tells you sort of how we've developed over time, in my opinion, every single version of Magic Online has been worse than the last. But at the heart of the problem has always been the ability to have enough people online at one time, so that it didn't crash or run really slowly. And so, like, you know, I'm sure we'll get into the arena discussion, but it's a funny thing because, in my opinion, the thing holding Magic Online back is not the fact that it's very expensive. And you have a very, very loud population of the paper group that will say, I will never pay double, you know, I will not pay for paper and for digital. And that's a fair thing to say. But I think we've seen that that is absolutely not the case for a lot of people. And Magic Online should be making far, 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 far more money than it is. But it just can't support, they can't run a big enough event. If they could run a Grand Prix on Magic Online, with infinite, like, let's just say you could have infinite entries. I can't see how you wouldn't have like 10, 20,000 people in those events paying $50 each straight to Wizards, you know, on a weekend. And the amount of money that is getting left on the table is kind of staggering. And so we've seen their answer is Arena, which isn't surprising. It's just disappointing to me because I think if they had just at whatever point in life developed a good enough Magic Online, they would be just printing money. Like, I think there's no doubt they could make $500 million a year net from Magic Online if they had the right software.
That's a lot of millions.
It is.
But, so, okay. Well, and that was a perfect transition because, you know, I want to hear straight because there's so many different opinions on the, you know, Twitter, social media, etc. You are, you know, you're a thought leader, you're an industry leader in online magic. So go ahead and just tell us straight from the horse's mouth, you know, what do you think of Arena? Is it going to kill Magic Online? And you know, where's your head at with this whole thing?
Sure. And let me just apologize. There's like garbage truck outside the window. If you're wondering what that noise is, he'll move along shortly. But to answer the question, I mean, Arena seems to be almost like a Hearthstone clone to me. And I think that's sort of the prevailing sentiment. I've gotten in, I want to say heated discussions, but people that call me an idiot or whatever for thinking what I think. But I mean, all I have here is my opinion. I have no insider knowledge about anything with respect to Arena. But it was funny to me when they came out with Arena and then on the same day came out for what I've been asking for about a year and a half, which is some commitment to Magic Online so that we know that we're, you know, all these people, not just me, but people have a lot of money invested in Magic Online. We want to know that that investment is not going to just go up in smoke tomorrow. And they did. They came out with that commitment. Can you still hear me? Sorry.
Yep. Okay. Yes, we're still good.
All right, I have my noise canceling headphones on, so I can't hear how actually loud it is. But
it's not really that. It's not really that.
No, you're good.
Okay. So, sorry, I lost my train of thought there. basically, I think that yes, they reaffirmed their commitment to Magic Online. So at least in the short term, I feel pretty good at this point. I think that it's very clear, having read some discussions or interviews of WotC personnel and just kind of reading between the lines, that they hope that Arena will become a smash success and they can then move into that as their primary digital product rather than Magic Online. And so the question is, you know, well, there's a lot of questions with that too. Is it, do you think that Arena will be that? It looked pretty good from the limited demo, but it's not they've confirmed there will not be any trading. Doesn't mean they won't change that, I suppose. But they've confirmed now that there will be no trading. So there's no secondary market at all. No opportunity to get any money out that you spend. And they have said that it's going to be a freemium model. So it's going to be free to play. You can do everything you want on there for free, assuming you want to invest the time to do it. Which, okay. Interesting. And so the question is, you know, how successful do you think Arena will be? And at what point does it start affecting Magic Online? Because, you know, we're seeing with this release, we're at our highest numbers ever. So clearly not yet. And, you know, we didn't see a huge sell-off. We saw like a little bit of a sell-off, but, you know, nothing like when we saw the treasure chests. You know, there was a huge sell-off. When they started treasure chests, there was a massive panic. and I think values went down like 25% in like 2 weeks. Whereas we saw like, I think, a 1% drop from this. So not really much to speak of, which is good. I mean, panics are never good for anybody. And I've been on our podcast, you know, I ramble on sometimes when I talk about this sort of thing. So feel free to redirect me at any point. But I think we've got two good years on Magic Online. Good years meaning like, you know, we can continue to run our business, you know, and continue to grow and without being much affected by MTG Arena, because the beta process is going to take some time. You heard the number of things that they don't know. They're seeking feedback, blah, blah, blah. And of course, there's all the questions of, can they even make a product that can compete or that can steal users away or whatever? It can bring in enough people to justify this expense. Because if you're replacing a cash cow with a freemium game, that's a risky thing to do as an executive if you value
and that's
your job.
And right, and that is my argument, Nathaniel. The crux of my argument when everybody goes, oh, that's the end, it's the death knell. I'm like, guys, there's so much money in Magic Online. You can't tell me that a freemium, again, it's like it is freemium, which means at the most you're going to have microtransactions through like random skin, cosmetic, whatever kind of upgrades. But like, you cannot tell me that you're going to replace an entire revenue stream with something that is, first of all, unproven and that has no real revenue behind it.
Whoa.
Yeah, right.
Let's not say unproven. The model has definitely shown that it can be successful.
Not for Magic.
Not for Magic, but a lot of games have adopted that model these days. So right.
The business that wants a freemium model is the business that is starting their game and they need to get bodies in for people to play. Magic is not that game. Magic already has an established thing. Well, and the amount of money that a single Magic Online user will spend on Magic Online dwarfs what a user will spend.
That part of the argument I have. Not that they just want to put, you know, my French, but asses in the seat. They are completely digital. So they don't have to worry about a paper side of the game.
Sure.
This actually came up a lot on this came up briefly last cast, but even on my other cast, people are still waiting to see if this turns out to be a kind of like a Pokemon TCG sort of thing where you get like codes and stuff like that, and you could redeem cards just so it's not completely freemium. And that's kind of where I felt the kind of compromise came in, because that this part of the argument, you're absolutely right, and you, Tarkan and Nathaniel, you brought it up that it's not just a digital game. Like Magic is not starting from scratch. It's been around for a long time. It doesn't need to it kind of has a core group of audience to already draw from. But the thing that I think is, I don't know if it's necessarily going to replace MTGO, but I think the caveat is going to be it can if we want it to. Like, you can't tell me in this day and age that a group of designers and they tapped into a lot of these other, you know, kind of studios, like, and these designers to come together. Like, you can't tell me it's not built just to do what it's doing. Like, I think it can easily be expanded on. So
there's no doubt. That's absolutely their goal. And I think the reason they're running them in parallel is because it would be, you would lose your job. I mean, you would lose your job. You're like, hey, we're going to throw away this huge money stream and we're going to hope this premium thing plays out. So you're right. So at some, basically if Arena gets to a critical mass and whatever that number is, I have no idea, but I mean, let's just say it's 20 times the number of users on Magic Online.
Sure.
Because the amount of money you're going to make compared to a Magic Online user is significantly less. It's a lot less. So let's just say it's 20 times. So if they need, say, 500,000 to a million users of Arena before they're considered like comparable to each other. And that's if you run them parallel. There's a lot of questions in terms of like, how does draft work?
And how does even like rotation work? Like, do you just do all your cards like evaporate into thin air once rotation happens? Because if it's just standard and
draft, they've said no on the rotation thing. They said that you'll keep your cards, they'll stay, and then so maybe there'll be some.
So exactly. So here we are already that right. So it's not. It wouldn't just be standard and draft because that's great. No. I get to keep my cards, but I can't use them because they're not standard anymore.
Well,
so
yeah,
already they're leaving the door open.
That to me tells me too that they're, you know, right now you can't trade, but what is the point of having the cards in a collection if you have no ability to trade them either, right? I mean, like, yes, the game, yes, playing with them too, but a big piece of all this is being able to trade, and it's like, yeah, guys, the door's not open right now, but we're leaving the possibility there.
Yeah. So, and I actually, Nathaniel, we actually had a dialogue on Twitter that was actually really positive, contrary to what I'm sure you've been through with other people. But I think we kind of came to that conclusion too, that, you know, not that I was out there doomsaying, but I did was kind of posing that this is kind of a wait and see with them. Like, if it does get that big, it's built to be able to be expanded on. And then we kind of came to the conclusion of, well, if it does get to that point, then we can cross that bridge where we can get there. But they are going to be running parallel for quite some time. And it's already going to be at least a year in beta. So it's like the timeline is not like tomorrow. It's going to be a very gradual.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's no doubt that they want that to happen.
Right.
For whatever reason, that's what they want. I think they have the business model that Hearthstone is envious of, but, you know, and I've been saying that for a long, long time, but, you know, Hearthstone has so many users, it doesn't matter. They make enough money. It just doesn't matter. But what, you know, Magic's not going to get 50 million users. Sorry, but it isn't.
No.
It's not going to get it. So, I mean, I heard people say like they thought getting a million users would be like trivially easy. And I think that, I mean, that's a huge portion of the Magic user base. I don't know what the current numbers are for paper.
Hearing this number, I don't know if it's still true, but we keep hearing this 20 million number from the last
million?
Time they ever said something about
really?
This. Yeah. So if 1 million, that's literally 1%, like, you know, that's 4%. Less than 1%.
I think, but right. Or 5% even.
Yeah, 5%,
whatever.
Right.
Whatever the number is. 5%.
Yeah, 5. Yeah. It is 5. So, you know, is that really that hard? 5% of your total user base? I don't think that shouldn't be that hard, right? And
I think,
you know,
it is, because I think that 20 million number is a little bit
I'm sure it's a little either overblown or, you know.
I also think that includes, like, you know, the dad that plays with his kid at the kitchen table. Like,
right,
I think
right.
Literally anyone who's ever read a rule book and has played a game.
Oh, it's, yeah, for sure. It's a little disingenuous, just like a lot of
bad around numbers. But I mean, I think you need at least 20 times the number of users that you have on Magic Online on this new thing. And that's without even knowing how they plan to monetize this.
Right.
Like we saw recently on Reddit yesterday, they're putting out a survey with, like, you know, basically the Pokemon TCG model. Like, how much would you pay for this digital pack? And like, it, you know, so they're exploring how they're going to make money, which is not what I would want. if I owned Wizards of the Coast and they have launched here, started to launch this new product, and we don't know how we're going to make money, I'd be like, it seems really bad, guys. Like, it seems like you're, you know, especially if you're going to negatively affect your big cash cows. And I've also been saying, if this gets to the point where it's big enough, let's replace Magic Online. And let's just say that's whatever. Yeah. 3 to 5 years from now, let's say they get to that point and say, all right, Magic Online, we're going to wrap it up. And hopefully they would then port us over in some way. People like me that have very large amounts of money and probably don't get everything, but just, you know, hopefully the average user gets, you know, maybe they play Arena for free forever or something, but at least something, out of,
here,
out of
here's 6 months, Nathaniel. Thanks so much for keeping our dying product going.
Right. But you know, for me, like, hey, if that's the way it goes, that's fine. I'm more, you know, for of course, like I would try to get what I can out of it, but you know, from a user's perspective, you hope that somebody with a $3,000 collection is going to get some value. You hope you don't, you hope they don't get screwed, but sorry.
That's when we go and actually open up Isle of Cards, right?
Right. Maybe. Yeah. So what I was getting to is what I don't think anybody agrees with me on this. And I don't think your audience is going to appreciate or agree. But if Magic Online gets, or excuse me, if Arena gets to that point and you're able to play for free on Arena, that is absolutely going to the point where they're like, all right, we make enough money from this, we're going to shut down Magic Online. How does that affect the paper market? And I think it has to be very negative. Certainly if I'm an LGS owner, I'm like, well, this isn't good if we get to that point. And again, I'm not saying this is going to happen tomorrow, but if Arena is so popular that they can shut it down, they make enough money that Magic Online doesn't matter to them anymore, it has to affect their paper market too. Yeah. Because if somebody can draft for free on Arena, then why are they going to pay $4 for a booster? It's crazy.
Right.
My argument is against that. Now, okay, there's two sides of this coin though. How does that revenue compare to the paper revenue? It's like, you can't even compare. However, at the same time, I mean, you're talking about a user base that has to be like 24 hours, has to be so big that like, they have to be paying something. Otherwise, I don't see WotC cutting off, like doing something that they know will negatively affect the paper business because that's their core business, right? Like, I don't see how that would work. Like,
right.
I don't see how.
I would agree with that. And I would make the same argument for Magic Online. It's like, why are you not just making another Magic Online? You know that that business model works. Instead, they're basically taking their trading card game and they're making a non-trading card game with it, with a freemium model with no trading. So you're basically trying out a completely different business model that is nothing like the paper business model or the Magic Online business model, which share the same business model. So
yeah. This is.
I'm not saying they would do it intentionally, but I don't understand how people.
Yeah, it can go so many different ways. I think it's built to expand, but this is what I felt is that they're going to have Magic Arena, and eventually, I don't know what the timeline is. MTGO is going to get a major overhaul, and you know, not be complete garbage. The software.
Yeah. Why,
Magic
though?
Arena is to kind of supposed to draw people into that initial, you know, standard draft, and then they get the kind of the full experience, quote unquote, with MTGO/paper. That's kind of where I saw it going.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's the thing, Nathaniel. Like, you gotta. I mean, and I'm sure you know. You understand? Like, Magic is way more complex game than most of these. So it's like I bring in a new user. I bring in the young Hearthstone audience through my, you know, Hearthstone clone, and then I kind of elevate them to like the quote unquote real game, like paper and Magic Online, because like Magic's a complex game, right? And I mean, like it's like I think it's a way for them. I think what they want to do is they want to stop losing market share to Hearthstone. They want to bring in some of those people and then port them over to their core offerings. That's how I see it as well. And again, I guess time will tell in the next couple of years, but to me, that it seems to me like they're going, look, we're losing eyeballs, and it's a generational thing, right? Like these kids don't, you know, I say this a lot. It's like these kids don't identify with Magic the same way you and I do. Like we grew up with paper. Like that's what we emotionally identify with. You know, our whole relationship with the game is through paper. Well, your relationship with the game is much more digital, but like these kids, like the 12-year-old kid who's learning Magic or who's learning these games, he's learning them through digital. And so I think it's a way for them. I think it's a recruitment effort. You know, I think it's a way for them to stop losing market share and to like kind of funnel players into paper.
Yeah, I think that is certainly a potential way of going about it. From what I've heard, I wouldn't say that that is the approach. It seems to me like they're going they're not obviously going all in on it, but they want it to be the they want it to be the Hearthstone competitor. But if all let's just say all the streaming is happening on this arena, like, I mean, how does that not then become the
It's really contingent on, and I think that's kind of all of these different avenues and theories of what could possibly happen is really all just contingent on how successful MTG Arena is. I mean, that's
it
would just have to be, because if it's not the, you know, what they expect it to be, then I think they revert back to the, you know, well, okay, we'll just keep it as kind of this recruitment tool. I like that term, you know, Tarkan.
Which is what Duels was. So you guys
think it's
what
Duels was, really. Yeah. Only much better, I feel. So we have MTG Arena as that. I don't even know how they would fix the whole, like, rotational thing. Maybe they just, like, grant you resources to get new cards. I don't know. But, and then you kind of upgrade, quote unquote, because you have to, you know, spend money, I would think, to have an MTGO account. And, you know, you get the kind of the full experience. So they can go that route where it's like a tier system. And, you know, MTG Arena is the base, and then you go to MTGO and blah, 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 blah. But if Magic Arena, I mean, I just don't see how it can't surpass, like, I don't know, give me a number. Like, what's the most successful day on MTGO where there's, like, what, 50,000 people on there? Maybe that.
I mean, that would sound way more. I think on a given day, I would think, like, I mean, I don't really know, but I mean, you got to look at, like, the league numbers and whatever, but I would guess, like, 10 to 30,000 somewhere in that range. So
that sounds great, but in an online gaming community, like, metric, that is a dying game. Like, 10 to 30,000 people is, like, what Halo 2 like gets on.
Yeah, but if the amount of money you're making from that group
I understand that. Yeah, that is true. I mean, if it's successful, it's successful, but I don't see, like, that is such a low number for something like, you know, especially this model, this freemium model. I think those numbers will be dwarfed, yeah, like, really.
But my counter to that is, like, how much could Magic Online make if it were a good piece of software?
If they just had
Arena and it literally had the exact same economic setup, why are you not doing that? Is my question. But
I get it would probably be so much more successful, but this is kind of like you have to kind of tap into. So I am kind of, not that I like to be, but, and I don't like know all these streamers and all that stuff and this, that, and the other thing. But to me, like, in today's gaming industry and these models that come out, like, how do you explain that to someone today? Like, hey, you're going to spend $10 on your account, first of all. And then, like, all these bots are going to provide you your cards, and you're spending, like, full price on drafting, like, $15 to draft, and you have to buy and sell your cards from, like, these, like, bot systems, and, like, that's how the economics works on there. Like, I don't, like, that's not something that, like, many people are used to these days.
You don't have to keep a secondary market in the same way. You don't have to have it be bots. It could be something else. I didn't mean, like, hey, I want to stay in business.
Right.
I just meant, from an economic standpoint.
If it looked like, and MTGO kind of kept some similar, you know, system and looked like Magic Arena, yeah, it would be great. It would be amazing. I have people that I've played, you know, the game with, and I'm like, you know, I would go on to an MTGO beta session, and they're like, oh, what is that? And I'm like, it's MTGO. And it's like, wow, I really wish it was better, because I'd love to play it, because I don't have to drive like 45 minutes to an hour one way just to go and play Magic at a store, you know, because, like, that's the specific store that I like.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that digital is the future, and I have been saying that for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in the context of, like, invest in your Magic Online product and make it what it needs to be so that it can be successful. But they seem to have realized it, I'm sure they have much more information than I do. It doesn't feel like the right move to me in terms of the business model, and I'm not even sure the business model is completely set in stone at this point based on the number of, like, the surveys and whatever that they've been putting out. But so maybe that changes, and maybe they add trading in. I mean, I don't know, but it seems weird to just do a completely new business model here. It seems weird to me to do that.
That's how I took it. I said, when I saw Magic Arena, I'm like, this is their answer. Like, this is what they're going to go all in on this and see how it goes. And yeah, I think it's just
but your
all,
answer
again,
in terms of exposure, you're saying, right?
Right. Well, and even like success, right? If this is like really takes off and they're shown like this is so like if they listen, I don't know, if they within a year completely dwarf their Magic Online community and their users and all that, like I think it's a wrap. I'm sorry. I think it's only a wrap if they make money.
If they don't make money, it can't be a wrap because they won't make money. But and you know,
but even if they like extrapolate it, like we got, I don't know, 60 to 100,000 people in 1 year, like I don't know how they just fall back on their old.
If someone worked for me and said that and got rid of Magic Online, I would fire them instantly because I'd be like, you have no
I think they would keep it crutching. I think they're going to keep it limping along until it needs to either be expanded on.
I think they will. It all comes down
to the bottom line.
Of course, it's money.
You have 100,000 users, but if those people aren't paying anything, or if those people are paying a fraction of what your 20,000.
Well, I'm not trying to slight anyone. That's kind of where that's what I'm posing is that if their user base is growing and kind of like an exponential rate, and those people are still kind of investing and paying and playing these drafts, I don't even know how it all breaks down yet. So that would be great if I knew that. But and they're kind of making this money. Maybe it's still not comparable to MTGO, but it's already like pretty close. I think you can only just go from there. So again, it all just comes down to how successful it is, and goes right back to what Nathaniel said of what do they hit that number of, you know, how much more successful does it need to be? Like how much more do they need to have to say, all right, you know what, MTGO, like we're just kind of.
I think it also matters where the success is coming from. If you're pulling people out of the paper market and into this by, say, putting digital whatever codes into Arena, and so you get these users, I think that they could have some very bad metrics in terms of where this is going. For it to be successful, they have to pull away users from Hearthstone. Otherwise, like you're just cannibalizing your existing businesses and you're just like propping up some like crazy number to suggest that you're going to make more money. So I don't know. I mean, Hasbro strikes me as very conservative. So it's surprising to me that they're letting this happen. And of course, they're doing it in a very cautious way, continuing to run Magic Online. And in a lot of ways, we have a lot more information than we used to as far as Magic Online is concerned. I mean, I hear you saying 1 year. I mean, I think, like I said, we have two, I think we have two good years and then 1 to 3, like not the greatest years where like they continue to run it, but like clearly it's not getting support it needs, which you could argue is currently the case, but.
Oh, no. I didn't mean 1 year and then MTGO is gone. It's already going to be a year where MTG Arena is in beta. Like it won't even be released yet.
Yeah. It's supposed to be in beta this month or next month rather. Right.
Yeah. I mean, these betas usually last at least a year. Like,
yeah.
It's normally 1 year. So that's already like we're talking about next year and it's going to be released. It's not going to be released in like 6 months.
Oh, I mean, I don't, because I would be absolutely shocked if this gets released next year. But, and also like I'm coming from a place where I've seen them develop digital products for 15 years and they do not have a good track record. That doesn't mean they're not going to do it this time. But you got to at least factor that into your decisions. But I mean, but you know, we get asked, or we have been asked by people, and I'm sure your audience is like, well, when should I be getting out here? And I was like, well, you got plenty of time to get out. But and I would not hold anything that has any sort of collector's value.
Yeah,
it's all about function right now in terms of being able to play games. Yeah. And there's still so many questions out there. But I am definitely of the opinion that a successful arena eventually puts Magic out. But like I said, I think that also significantly affects paper in a bad way.
Yeah.
And no one seems to agree with me on that, which is fine.
I think it draws people in and that's great. And it could be a boon to paper, but I think they would have to significantly change. I think it would honestly start looking a lot more like Pokemon. I mean, where they release these sets and then like a month later they release these box sets with all these cards in it, because you're absolutely right. Like if people are getting used to paying like, I don't know I'll just use like this number from Hearthstone, like 150 coins or whatever, or 200 coins for a draft. And then you tell them they have to pay like $15 for a draft, or like you have to spend like $20 on some single that you, four of them that you need to play paper. Like that's just not going to fly.
Right. Agreed. So they either won't play paper or
either
has to
won't
get
play
cheaper.
Paper or it has to be significantly cheaper, which means I think the only really thing it would negatively affect in a huge way is like individual investors, the speculators, quote unquote. But if you're a store,
I would think that would hurt LGSs. Right? Really? You think that's great for a store?
I think it would. I think like you're selling all their products. So like, right. You know, where are they going to go to get all these like box sets and all these, you know, cards to play?
Arena.
I mean, as an individual like person, like I'm not going to buy like, you know, well, some people will. I personally won't. Like 35 of these like boxes just to open up like a card and sell it. Like I'm not going to.
Right, but now you don't have a collecting game, right? So that you've taken away the collecting aspect, which I would argue is a very important part of Magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you know, there's a million roads we can go down. Kelly, the CEO of QS, has a. I mean, he has his kind of model of Magic and where Magic he believes should go. I mean, we've had discussions where he thinks the secondary market shouldn't even exist. That you know, Wizards should be getting all this revenue themselves. They should do this whole box set model, like a complete revolution, like completely overhauling the whole booster system. I mean, there's a lot of paths that we can go down here. I guess because we're at an hour, slightly over an hour, so we got to wrap this up, Nathaniel. I'm curious that let's just end this with like kind of like one question. 5 years from now, not two, we'll say 5 years from now, are you still running Card Hoarder through Magic Online alongside a prosperous and thriving secondary platform in Arena, or does Magic Online no longer exist and Arena has taken over? And I'd like to get all, you know, the three of us can each kind of answer that.
I'm leaning towards it's Arena. That's like their only digital space. Well, yeah, as Arena.
Well, let me add a secondary question for you on top of it. Where does paper stand as well?
I don't think they ever, even if, again, like Pokemon, for as successful as their, I don't even know all these numbers. So they've been able to keep their paper side and their online side going for how long? I don't think they ever get rid of paper no matter what, as long as Magic's around, there's going to be paper Magic.
Okay.
I will say that I think the three exist. I think that Magic Online, it wouldn't surprise me, in 5 years, there's an overhaul of Magic Online and they finally get their act together. I think Arena remains the Hearthstone. It has tons and tons and tons of users who pay little to nothing. And then they, to really play Magic, they, you know, they join the big boy club and they pay money and they play, you know, Magic. And then paper will continue to exist as it always has. I think that's where we're at 5 years.
Yeah.
That's a hard question.
It is really hard. I mean, it's just, again, it all just comes back to how what MTG Arena does. I mean, how well it does and how it, I'll tell you this much. In 5 years, it would have definitely been expanded on at least once. They will have at least let it play Modern or something similar to Modern or something, because there we'll have about, I don't know, like three or four rotations by then, three maybe, and people need to, like, those can't just evaporate. So they need to do something with those cards. Either they recycle them back into Standard where they give you some sort of currency to pay for new cards, or they release something like Hearthstone did where you have, you know, the Modern quote unquote of Hearthstone. They're going to have to do something.
I'll simplify it like this. I actually don't think Wizards is good enough in the digital space to make a game that can get to make the platform strong enough with the complexities the game requires, like digitally, to replace Magic Online. I just don't think they can. I don't think that in 5 years, I don't think they actually have, like, they can actually pull it off. I really don't think they can. Hearthstone is so much more simple. It's such a much more simplified digital game than Magic would ever have to be. Especially you talk about all of a sudden now you want to have leagues and you want to have all these things that Magic Online does and tournaments, and you want to have Modern and Legacy, and like you can't. I don't see Wizards being able to pull that off in 5 years. Like that's so much complexity into a digital game that a game like Hearthstone does not require. I just don't see it happening.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that I would probably land on that as well. I don't think they are going to be able to make Arena a smash success. I don't think they can do it. I think though that from Magic Online's perspective, in 5 years, I think things will be significantly damaged, we'll say, because I think they're going to shoot themselves in the foot in the effort to make Arena work and destroy parts of, or some of, or all of Magic Online within that period. Whether or not they could then revive it, you know, who knows? But if I was a betting person, I would bet that they would not be able to pull it off from Arena's perspective without damaging their two profitable business lines to the point where someone says, all right, we're done here. Like we've ruined our business completely. So that's, if I was a betting man, I would bet that. But if Arena were a smash success, I think that at the 5-year standpoint, or at the 5-year point, we are getting ported over to Arena and closing down Magic Online. And you know, I mean, I don't know. Anybody's guess is as good as mine. We'll get more information as we get into the beta, see how it really looks, how's it going to really be, what our draft's going to look like, because you can't have free drafting on Arena, the exact same drafting, and then charge $12 on Magic Online. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
But I think the competitive space will stay on Magic Online for quite some time, because I don't think Arena is going to be a bastion for competitive play.
Super, super, super quick. What are a couple of the highest selling cards for you, Nathaniel, of Ixalan so far, now that it has dropped on MTGO?
Oh my goodness.
Just give us a couple.
I can look it up.
Anything,
for you.
Any trends that you're seeing so far? Because I looked like, I think 2 days ago, so it might be completely different by now, but I saw some crazy stuff happening. But maybe. You know, that has shifted to other cards or things are starting to normalize, but I'd love to know maybe like just a couple of cards that have been selling really well for you so far.
Yeah, let me just take a look.
Awesome.
I assume you don't care about like commons and uncommons.
Yeah, let's stick to marquee stuff.
Gotta sort it. The biggest seller is Carnage Tyrant.
Okay.
Carnage
Tyrant, very next rare or mythic.
Basically, well, I'll look at the rares in a second, but just looking at the mythics now, Carnage Tyrant, I don't even know how to pronounce this one, but Hotly. And then a bit, you know, significantly fewer copies, like Jace, Gishath, Vona, okay. But those are all like super cheap though. But yeah. All the ones that are like money, Jace, the Warrior Poet, and the Carnage Tyrant.
And the top ones, Carnage Tyrant, top rare.
Top rare, Hostage Taker. Is the Hostage Taker and Ripjaw Raptor are basically right there.
Nice. All right.
And then, so.
Tark, you got to run. So we're really quickly, where can they find you on the internet? We're going to wrap things up.
Yep. At @the_Tark on Twitter. I'm also do an admin over at the MTG Finance Central Facebook page. You can chat with me there. I work with QS and Nathaniel. This is awesome as always, man. I'm glad we finally got to talk about your online business in full. And you are our kind of resident online expert. So, you know, we've had our insiders really asking. We've had a lot of demand for more online content. So we want to make sure, you know, we have you on. And, you know, we'd love to be able to tap into you to get information and, you know, get any kind of insight you can provide us in the online world. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys invite me on again. And
absolutely. Where can they find you, Nathaniel?
Well, I used to be on Twitter, but like now that we got a community manager, like I'm not allowed to like tweet anymore.
You don't have like, all right. You know what? I'm gonna make my own account. I'm gonna tweet it, you know.
So for now, just email me, Nathaniel@cardhoarder.com. Awesome. If you got questions or whatever, want to chat.
Was that really one of the stipulations?
No, it was
just,
like,
you're done.
We ended up like replying to the same things. Okay. And it's like, all right, I'll stop replying to stuff, but it's like a knee jerk reaction. I'm on my phone. So I was like, all right, I'm going to take a step back and you can do your thing on social media. But
sorry to cut you off. Continue.
No. And so just for now, email Nathaniel@cardhoarder.com. Just shoot me an email. And if it requires a lengthier discussion, we can always, but awesome. Email is usually good for me.
And then at Card Hoarder on Twitter.
At Card Hoarder on Twitter.
Sadly, no more Isle of Cards.
Yeah, it still exists, that Twitter.
Yeah. So I'll send you in like fake buy lists. Fine. Yeah. I'll still go tweet at you like, why aren't your pre-orders up yet?
Oh man, you're gonna make me go gray or lose all my hair.
Yeah.
Go further, Greg.
I'm getting there too. Nathaniel, thank you again so much. We have such great conversations. Glad you can give us some of your time. I know we went a little long, but it was just a great conversation, so we just kept it running. At ChazVMTG on Twitter. You can find me on the QS Insider Discord. If you want to hear me twice a week, I'm on the MTG Goldfish podcast. I write articles for QS and do it all over here. So great cast. Thank you so much again, Nathaniel. We will do this again soon, even outside the Vendor series.
All right. Sounds good, guys.
Take care, everyone.